Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 30th of June, Anno Domini 2012, and you possibly lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Linda Wildman.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to choose, things to lose, nothing but blues. Steve, as you can tell, is not here. Dave is not here, so I am the Lone Ranger.
This is your old friend, Lonesome George.
None of you are old enough to remember that. Not a one of you. So please, for God's sake, call 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. This is going to be a long 2 hours.
And let's hope that nothing happens to the phone.
Yeah. Oh, now you've jinxed it. Also, I was up a good portion of the night. Some idiot in our neighborhood was setting off fireworks and the dogs.
Oh, pre-July celebration?
Yeah, yeah. So, I was up most of the night. Because my wife had to be at market at 5 o'clock in the morning. My daughter had to be to work. I had a driver, but that doesn't matter. I was the one who was up with the dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. A U.S. judge on Tuesday backed Apple's request to stop Samsung Electronics from selling its Galaxy Tab 10.1 tablet in the United States, giving the iPhone maker a significant win in the global smartphone and tablet patent wars. Samsung's Galaxy touchscreen tablets, powered by Google's Android operating system, are considered by many industry experts to be the main rival to the iPad, though they are currently a distant second in it to Apple's devices. Microsoft and Google have also announced tablet offerings. U.S. District Judge Judy, I have no idea what I'm talking about, Koh, in San Jose, California, had previously denied Apple's bid for an injunction on the tablet and multiple Galaxy smartphones. However, a federal appeals court instructed Koh to reconsider Apple's request on the tablet. Although Samsung has a right to compete, it does not have a right to compete unfairly by flooding the market with infringing products, Koh wrote on Tuesday, adding the order should become effective once Apple posts the $2.6 million bond to protect against damages suffered by Samsung if the injunction is later found to have been wrong. In addition, there's also a similar injunction against the Nexus phone, and Apple has to pony up a $96 million bond for that one. So that's about $100 million. I'm sure Apple's going to send that up first thing Monday morning, I'm sure. Apple has waged an international patent war since 2010 as it seeks to limit the growth of Google's Android system, the world's best-selling mobile operating platform. A decisive injunction in one of the U.S. legal cases could strengthen Apple's hand in negotiating cross-licensing deals where firms agree to let each other use their patented technologies. Opponents of Apple say the iPhone and iPad maker is using patents too aggressively in its bid to stamp out competition. Apple sought a primary injunction of Apple's 10.1 Galaxy Tab based on a single design patent for the case. Apple has patented the rectangle with rounded corners. I've read the patent, and that's essentially what it says. Which is really just one aspect of the product's overall design. Apple said in a statement, should Apple continue to make legal claims based on such a generic design patent, design innovation and progress in the industry could be restricted. The South Korean firm said it would take necessary legal steps and did not expect the ruling to have a significant impact on its business as it had a broad range of products. It brought out 3 tablet models last year alone. The company said the U.S. ruling does not affect the updated Tab 10.12, and retailers can also clear their existing Tab 10.1 inventory. So, our question to you at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is how often have you confused Apple's iPad with Samsung's Galaxy Tab? And your choices are, I've never confused the two, I'm not stupid, and, oh, all the time, I'm an idiot. Now, I know you're going to have more to say about this, so aside from calling us, you can also check out my website, asknick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And You can answer. Well done, you. Well done.
I was searching for it.
I understand. No, you did great. So the question there, of course, is what do you think of Apple's injunction against Samsung? And that's our question to you. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Forgive me, but I'm still stuck on a rectangle with rounded corners.
Yeah, there were actually 16 points in the ruling, but they're really, because it's lawyer speak, there's really only four, and they just kept repeating them ad nauseum. There's the case looks too similar from 10 feet away. There's a great cartoon on the out on the web this morning. A lawyer holding up an iPad, and like 40 feet down is a refrigerator. And he says, yep, they look identical. And the judge going, all right, no more refrigerators in America. And the second one is Apple has patented swipe to unlock.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is they patented their icons. I don't see any similarity with my phone, but they're showing something, some other interface from Samsung that looks a little similar, I suppose. And then the fourth one is, it's called Tap to Data. And it's essentially they have patented tapping on an icon. Yeah.
Oh.
I have read the patent. I have it right here in front of me. And that's essentially what it says. And I get it. Everybody deserves the right to their own intellectual property.
Is there a right way to tap and a wrong way to tap?
Apparently, there's only one way to tap, and Apple owns it now. So, I do. I get it. I get it that there are you have the right to your intellectual property. I get it that you want to protect your intellectual property. But really, some patents are just plain stupid. And I'm really disappointed in Apple. I have always been a big fan of Apple, and I expect better things from them. And it's clear that their motto is now, why innovate when we can litigate? I do understand that. And now that Steve Jobs is dead, poor Tim Cook, really, it's all he's got left is litigation. So I understand, I really do understand all of that. But there comes a point where the U.S. Patent Office really should look at somebody saying, really? You want to patent the rectangle? No. No. I don't care how round the corners are. No. And that's really what we need, is just somebody to step up in front of, because there are a million of these stupid patents.
Mm-hmm.
People have patented everything there is. And you know, the reality is that nobody looked and said, well, there's prior art. You know, people were tapping on icons back in the Amiga workbench days in the late 70s, early 80s. People had rounded rectangles, probably 50,000. I believe the Ten Commandments were on rounded rectangles. So I'm not entirely certain that Apple should be allowed to patent the rounded rectangle.
Now, does it give any instructions in the patent as far as how large the rectangle is?
No. Essentially, no. They give an example, which is the size of the iPad. But essentially what they
patented... So they're covering any size
if it's
rectangle.
A rounded rectangle, that's how they then went after the cell phone. Because it is also a rounded rectangle. I actually have one right here. It is my phone. And as you can see, it is indeed a rectangle with rounded corners.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
is now illegal.
Mm.
According to Judge Koh in California.
Now, do they assume that the rounded rectangle is safer in one's pocket?
I have no idea what the... I'm sure, you know, better than sharp corners. I get that. But they have essentially patented the rounded rectangle.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. And I don't know what will come of that. It really... I think it's just an opening salvo. Apple basically wants money for every Android phone that is sold in America. That's what this is all coming down to. That's all it's about is money. And so, you know, because Apple's not really making as much money as they'd like. The Galaxy Tab is an incredible device, and it's taken a decent piece of the market, and Apple doesn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
They want to just own the market. If they can't own the market, they want money from everybody else who's in the market. I do understand that, and I sympathize with them. They haven't had a real new product in a while. I mean, a real new, innovative, you know, the day we first saw the iPod, it was holy moly. And the first day we saw the iPad, it was holy moly. And then, you know, since then, it's kind of been, oh, okay. And I get that. But they're really, you know, I wish they would go back to innovating, not litigating.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. And don't forget, you can join in the fun by calling 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. While we're waiting for you to dial, I'm going to read one or two of these emails. We also take emails. Dan from Rochester writes, I heard ads for Clean My PC on the radio. I checked it out and bought it. It returned 18,000 issues. 18,000 issues. Is this software legit, or does it report all these issues so I will pay $300 for them to remove the viruses? Thank you for your help. Well, Dan, I think you already know the answer to that particular question. The reality is that you can do everything that Clean My PC does from the Security Tango, and the Security Tango's pieces and parts can be free. I always tell people they should pay for them, because paying for them means that those those companies will continue to make great products, but you can do it all for free. And I think that you'll find Clean My PC, while I'm sure it's a perfectly legitimate and utterly wonderful company, credit to the human race, and I'm sure they're nice to their mothers with it, but I'm not entirely certain that you need to spend $300 to get rid of the viruses that the Security Tango will do for free. And so that's the way that works. All right, we're going to the phones, and our first caller is Linda, our friend Linda from Greece, New York. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Hi. It's about time you got a female on there.
You aren't kidding.
Yeah, who's the female?
I'm Linda Wildman.
She's a fixture here at Jazz 90.1. She does lots of stuff. She does shows. She does all kinds of things, and...
I'm on the air from 11, well, starting Monday from 11 to 2.
That's it. I just didn't remember the time.
Yeah. The morning or at night?
Yeah, morning.
Oh, okay.
I will be following Joel Van Buren.
I heard about Rebo Uninstaller.
Sure.
Scares the hell out of me.
Why?
Well, you know, I put it on, and I've got a lot of files that are not, how do I explain this? I've got a lot of things on there. The product is gone. But I've got remnants left over, and I can't figure out how to do that without screwing this thing up.
Well, here's the deal with Revo One Installer. It really needs to be, you're right to be a little cautious with it. It needs to be understood that 99% of what you could uninstall is going to be completely safe, particularly if it relates directly to the program. As for the other 1%, one of the things Revo Uninstaller tries to do and is 99.9% successful at it is to replace anything that's actually dangerous with the original file that you know the software replaced originally. So you've got a DLL in your machine.
Uh-huh.
Some piece of software you install replaces that with their own. So when Revo uninstalls that changed DLL, it knows what that changed DLL replaced and tries to put back the original DLL.
Okay.
It is almost always successful. There's generally speaking about a 1 in 1,000 chance that it will not work correctly.
Okay, how do I, now I've got a lot of programs, you know, the ad removed, all that. There's a program on there, and I can't remember what it is, but I click on it, and it says, I'm sorry, I can't uninstall that. Some files are missing. How do I get rid of that if the original file is not so Revo Uninstaller can find it?
Well, what you have to do in that case, and this is what I always suggest, reinstall the original product. the one that you can't get rid of.
Uh-huh.
And then uninstall it through Revo Uninstaller.
The thing is, it won't let me reinstall it. That's the problem. Yeah.
Well, that's then got to go to somebody who can dig into the registry and start doing things
by
hand.
You know, I mean, as I told, you know, because I saw that and I go, oh, okay. And I, so it's, you know, so, you know, so there's just too many things on there that I don't understand, you know, like this says this thing, you know, I've got a learning disability.
Right.
And, you know, and if I don't understand it, I don't muck around with it. So I'm thinking to myself, well, maybe I shouldn't use this.
Yeah. You know what, Linda? That is a beautiful sentiment. The reality is that Revo Uninstaller does assume a certain amount of knowledge on the part of the user. And while you may be able to use your computer perfectly well, it's like a car.
Yeah.
You know, I tell people this all the time. How many of you really drop down under your car and start unscrewing stuff because there's a little noise? You take it to somebody, they fix it for you. That's the whole point. So there are people who love to you know, get on the dolly and roll themselves under their car every weekend.
Yeah.
And there are other people who prefer to take it to the garage and be driving a safe and ready to use car every day. And
So this is really not something for something in my situation that I should muck around with.
No, I think you should not.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I say that all the time. You know, I had a friend who bought an MG. I forget the exact model, but it was this little green sports car. It was doing about 120 just sitting in the driveway. And he spent every weekend under it. Desperately trying to get it to run. And you know what? That was his hobby. God bless him. In the meantime, I was at that point driving a Volkswagen Beetle, the original Beetle, and it just started up every day and ran like it was supposed to. So I was pretty happy with that. Okay. Our next caller. Do we have time for a caller, or should we?
No, we probably don't.
All right, Skip, you hold on. We'll get to you after the break, but we will definitely do that. But I used to just get in my car and drive, and he'd be, you know, underneath his car every weekend. You have to make a choice as to which one of those two people you are. Listen, we're going to take a little break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the truly great Linda Wildman and me, Nick Francesco. Call us, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe, some days longer than other. Sound Bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Member supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest running computer show. Sound Bites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Linda Wildman.
And we're back, and our caller is Skip. From West Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Skip. What's your question?
Hello there.
Hi.
I'm wondering, how critical is the exact EXE, whatever, you know, name that starts up a program? In other words, if you change the name of a program, would the program still run?
Yes and no. Thanks for calling.
Well, wait. The reason I'm asking, a lot of these viruses and things prevent certain programs to clean them up from running.
Right.
And I was just wondering if you changed, you know, malware bytes to Xware bytes or something, could you get it to run and help get rid of these virusy thingies?
Yeah, again, it entirely depends on whether or not they're going after a program name or the fact that someone is attacking them. Right? See the difference?
Yeah, I understand. Which is more common?
They're both very common these days. Actually, they're more common that they go after the fact. That's just my phone. I'm sorry, I forgot to mute it. Nobody ever sends me information.
What's landing?
It's my wife, who should know better. Don't call me now. Sorry. Sorry.
It sounded
a
like
personal
a jet.
Business
so we...
here. Yeah. Basically, the thing is that they know that the names can be changed, so they mostly attack the fact that they mostly defend against the fact that they're being attacked. They, okay. If they do find the name, some of them will try to delete it or whatever, but that's becoming less common as because in particular things like Stinger have actually come out in about three or four different names, so they are less about the name than they are about the attack.
Okay, so you're saying that won't help then?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's a great idea, but it's not going to be enough most of the time.
Good enough. Thank you very much.
Yep-er. It is a good idea, though, and I wish it worked because it would make all of our lives a whole lot easier. But the reality is that it mostly doesn't matter. Mostly, about 90% of the time, doesn't matter. I guess if it doesn't matter 90% of the time, it doesn't matter at all, right? I mean, 10%, right? So, yeah, it doesn't matter. All right, our next caller, our friend Bodan from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bodan. Long time no hear.
Yes, Nick. Good afternoon on a salubrious and steamy Saturday. Anyway, I've got a question in regards to a vast antivirus program. This morning, I checked to see that there actually was a new program version, which I downloaded, and it took, machine had to be restarted after Avast downloaded the new version, and then it took, I want to say, at least 15 minutes to update the program before it said you're all set and done. But also, it installed and downloaded the Google web browser. Are you aware of that? Why Avast would be putting into its package Google Chrome?
Well, it puts Google Chrome in there because Google pays them to do that.
Okay.
Generally, during installation, there is a place you can go to say, don't install it.
And I probably missed that. Well,
yeah,
I definitely missed it.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure they don't make it that easy. So three things, no respect to Spanish Inquisition, were really happening when you restarted your machine. First, it had to install the new Avast into the startup sequence. That takes a little bit of time. Then it did a scan of your machine. Well, not in that order. First, it did a scan of your machine to make sure it was clean, and then inserted it. It may have cleaned something up, and then inserted itself into the boot sequence. And then the third thing it did, of course, was, in fact, download Google Chrome.
Now, you personally do like Google Chrome as a web browser. I've been using a lot of Firefox.
Firefox is wonderful. I prefer Chrome. Up until recently, Chrome was better than Firefox at sandboxing.
What does that mean,
sandboxing? Well, that basic, and in fact, it's still better. Sandboxing means that every tab essentially runs independently of every other tab. So if you have a tab that crashes, most of the time, of course, nothing is perfect, but most of the time it doesn't crash the other tabs and it doesn't crash the browser.
Okay.
And that's called sandboxing.
Okay.
And up until very recently, Chrome did it much better than Firefox. And I still think it does it a little better. It does it a little differently, and I think it's a better way. But that's basically one of the reasons. And also, again, up until very recently, Chrome had a much better handle on a lot of the newer HTML5 commands.
Okay, from your comments, then, what has happened to Google Chrome to maybe not make it as good as it was 6 months ago, in your opinion?
Well, Firefox got better. Chrome didn't get worse. Yeah.
So are you basically now using more Firefox, even though both products are good?
No, I still use Chrome. I still just like it better. I think it's faster. Again, Firefox has gotten much, much, much better. It's not that I dislike Firefox.
Mm-hmm.
I do not look forward to your letters. I love Firefox. I just love Chrome better.
Okay, yeah. Some people like vanilla ice cream. Some people like maple walnut.
Exactly.
That is correct. Now, the other thing is,
if you had that bacon,
I say about 6 months ago, there was another program update to Avast, where now there's some more, there's real-time shields that play into effect. And I noticed this. Even if I go to my Facebook page and I scroll and see all the latest posts, I will see that little Avast ball turning in the lower right-hand corner, scanning the new page. Why? And it seems to slow down the load of the page.
It will, and that's because many of the new viruses vector through Facebook posts, Twitter well, places that you go when you click on a Twitter thing.
Yeah, actually, I remember I clicked on a video clip from one of my friends on the Facebook page, and all of a sudden I got a little warning saying Avast has detected a possible malware, a bad site or something like that. I go, come on, it's just home video.
No, you have no idea. Believe me when I tell you that what it may be your friend created that home video, and it's perfectly safe. But something on that page or something in the player in the background or something in the video itself is being detected, maybe falsely.
Okay.
Right? But is being detected as a virus. And Avast is now protecting you against all that stuff.
Now, when that happens, should I terminate my web browsing is Avast doing its job by, you know, shielding it and putting it, you know, somewhere else?
Well, if Avast has said it blocked it,
yeah,
then it's blocked.
Okay.
But, you know, I would just not go to that page again.
Correct.
Yeah.
But that's it. Alrighty, you've given me some information that I was looking for to today. Nick, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bodan.
Bye-bye.
They're all getting to be multiple. The days of specialization are over, right? It's Isaac Asimov said specializations for insects, and he's really right. You know, most programs that did one thing really well are now all trying to do 10 and 12 and 15 things really well. The problem is, only a few of them do more than one thing well.
Mm-hmm. Ace of none.
Exactly. So we find a lot of things that aren't really all that great. All right, listen, Google I.O. is Google's yearly developers conference at which Google announces its new product. Sit back, strap in, and keep your hands and feet inside the radio, because here's the short list, and it gives you some idea of what Apple is afraid of. There have been a total of 400 million Android activations, 400 million devices, with 1 million activated per day. So today, 1 million devices, Android devices, will be activated. There are some 600,000 games and applications available for Android devices. Even more, those applications have been downloaded some 20 billion, with a B, times. Google announced the latest version of Android 4.1. It's codenamed Jelly Bean and implements new technology from Google's Project Butter. It's like butter. To enhance performance and visuals along with a new search experience, which I have to tell you is astonishing. For all you eager beavers, Jelly Bean is coming to the Galaxy Nexus. That's why Apple hates it. The Zoom and the Nexus S in mid-July and an Android developer preview is available today. This update brings quite a few changes to the OS, including massive performance improvements to boost responsiveness, fluid animations, a new predictive keyboard, Google Voice Search, which is unbelievable, enhancements to Google Beam, which is their near-field communication stuff, and Android's notification system. With the release of Jelly Bean, Android is getting a completely new search experience. The entire system is set to give you more information that you want based largely upon your location. More specifically, Google Now works to make your life easier moment by moment. It figures out where you commute to work and how. It gives you the fastest route for the way you travel if there's a lot of traffic. When you're at a public transit stop, Google Now tells you when the next one arrives. So, for example, Linda, I know you have to be to work at 11. It's now 10:15. Given that you bike, it will take you 22 minutes to get to work. So you should, and traffic is fairly light, so you should leave at X. And that's, I mean, it actually tells you all of that as opposed to, ding, you have to leave for work in 15 minutes.
So it's sort of like a voice calendar.
It does all of that and more. I mean, it actually, you know, because you may not be home when it goes off.
Mm.
You're off having breakfast with friends. Oh, Linda, I know you take the bus. You've got 10 minutes till the next one that would get you to work on time. Google also announced the Nexus 7 tablet, a 7-inch device running Android 4.1 and made by Asus. I ordered mine. It has a Tegra. What?
Is Android a device or
Android
is
an
software?
Operating system.
So it's software.
That runs on phones and tablets like Apple's iOS runs on the iPad and the iPhone.
Okay.
So it's the thing that shows you all the icons and runs the programs when you say run it and all of that. So that's what it does.
Okay.
Gotcha. The Nexus 7 tablet has a Tegra 3 quad-core processor with a 12-core GPU, 1280 by 800 HD display. The tablet is available directly from Google Play for $199. And will ship in mid-July. That's right, $199 for a quad-core chip, 12 cores of GPU, 8 gigs of RAM, 1280 by 800 display, and all the other amenities that you would find in a tablet. Google Play is expanding the new edition with a new edition of movies, TV, and magazine purchases, which also makes Apple angry. This additional content is available today in Google Play. Movie partners include the likes of Disney, Bravo, NBC Universal, and more. As for magazines, Esquire, Wired, Family Circle, or launch partners, issues can be bought individually or users can buy a subscription. Google has announced an overhaul of its tablet experience for Google Plus. The Android version is available immediately, and the iPad counterpart is on its way. By the way, for those of you who laugh at Google Plus because it is a wasteland or a ghost town, here are a couple of statistics. 250 million accounts have upgraded to or signed on for a Google account. 150 million of those are active every month. 50% of the users sign on every day. On an average, 12 minutes a day are spent in the Google stream. Google also produced a completely new feature for Google Plus dubbed Events. This feature helps with all facets of having an event before, during, and after. Google Plus events is available today. And might take a while to roll out for everyone. It's another example of how Google is using Google Plus as a social layer to tie all of its products together. And I have another news story that will talk more specifically about Google Events. The Nexus Q is a social streaming media player. This $300 device appears to rely heavily on having an Android device at its heart. That's fairly similar to Apple TV. And you may say, well, Apple TV is only $99. Why is this $300? Well, that's because it's made in America. And lastly, Google Glass is a reality. It's essentially something you wear like a pair of glasses or over your glasses, and it takes live streaming video and sends it to the web of what you're doing. What it was interesting, when they introduced it, they had a bunch of guys biking, and you could see it from their point of view, then scaling a building, and then a whole bunch of people jumped out of a blimp onto the roof of the Moscone Center in California where the event was being held, and it was all streamed live video. The demos were really impressive and continued Google's great tease on that. So what do you think of Google's announcements? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. You know, the interesting thing to me about Google Glass is not that you can, you know, suddenly everybody can see what you're walking around and doing, but for sporting events. Think about being able to watch from Monica Seles' point of view while she plays tennis, or from I don't know, you know, name your favorite football player or baseball player or whatever. I think that we're going to see a lot of teams starting to use that. You can just stick it right in the helmet. You don't even have to put it in the person's glasses, you know, right on their face. You can raise it up a little bit. I think it's going to see big use there. All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Linda Wildman and me, Nick Francesco. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, or toll free 1-800-790-0415. Back in a couple minutes with the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Linda Wildman.
And we
yes,
our soundbite.
An unlikely pair.
Exactly. Linda's holding her own and asking all the right questions, and I'm very grateful.
You're welcome. It's only my lack of, well, experience and knowledge.
Well, on the other hand, I could never do what you're doing over there. I've never learned how to do that, and really, I'm not sure I ever want to.
It's not that bad.
You know, I'll tell you what. back in the day when I was doing theater, I did everything. I've hung lights, I've built sets, I've painted, I've sewed costumes, and I've done sat in the booth and done lighting from the booth.
Mm-hmm.
And of it all, and of course I've acted and directed and everything else. Of it all, the only part I hate is being in the booth. If something goes wrong, I can't ad-lib my way out of it or fix it. You know, it's just you're live on the air and there's that board in front of you screwing up. And I don't need any of that. I don't need it.
We usually have computer problems. That's what.
Well, me, see, no, those wouldn't bother me. Those I can fix. But the rest of it, no, thank you. Anyway, since its inception 1 year ago, the most familiar critique of Google Plus has been Google's sign-up strategy. As users face prompts from many of Google's popular existing properties to upgrade their accounts to include Google Plus profiles, it has felt like more of a strong-arm approach than a welcome invitation. There's a better, more personal approach, and Google may have just found it. First unveiled at the I/O Developer Conference on Wednesday, the Events feature allowed Google Plus users to send out customized invitations to their friends both on and off the Google Plus platform. It's helpful that it'll auto-update invitees' Google Calendars if they accept and acts as a single repository for event photos. Essentially, everyone at the event can take photos and automatically send them to the same place. On its own, it doesn't seem like the kind of feature that would make one rush out to use Google Plus, but here's the thing. If Google can convince even a small number of existing Google Plus users to start sending out event invites, the network could wind up getting a whole bunch of new users. Here's an example. Let's say I'm not on Google Plus, but I receive an invite to a wedding from a friend who is. If I click through the email to the invitation, I'm greeted with a big Google-branded prompt to join Google Plus. So in essence, it acts as a direct mail solicitation service powered by a group of people who are much more convincing than Google, your friends and family. Hangouts, the on-air group video chat service, has been the service's most compelling draw to date, offering a far better feature set than Facebook's one-to-one Skype integration. And the party mode part of events allows everyone in attendance to instantly upload pictures to the same album using the Google Plus mobile app, creating a living real-time photo journal of a specific time and place. Obviously, there's no guarantee anyone will use the service, though it's off to a promising start. More than 1,000 people used the party mode at Google's official I/O shindig on Wednesday evening, contributing upwards of 13,000 photographs over the course of the night. Now that's a party. We'll see who sticks around to clean up afterwards. Are you using or thinking of using Google Events? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. You know, we've been talking about having a summer picnic for Soundbites, and I just might send out invitations on Google+. I'll have everybody send me their email addresses. And I'll invite them all on Google Plus. When you come to the event, people who take pictures can have them automatically uploaded to the event site so we can all see them from then on right at the site. I think it's a brilliant idea on Google's part, and I think it's excellent. I'm very impressed by the concept. I'm very impressed by the idea. I've actually gotten several invitations already. I actually attended an event and snapped a bunch of pictures, and up they went. It was very, very cool. Very, very easy to use. Very, very simple. And it makes creating the event, managing the event, and then having all that stuff in one place after the event really, really easy. Somebody paid attention at Google, and that's one of the things I like. That essentially came from an individual at Google, and everybody said, oh, there's an idea. We should run with that. And so they did. And that's one of the nice things about Google. That's where a lot of their really innovative products come from. So if you haven't had a chance to check out Google Plus Events yet, really pretty nifty idea. Really pretty nifty idea. I was impressed. I was actually impressed. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe from Chautauqua, New York.
Chictawaga.
Sorry for my spelling. Oh, excuse me. That is entirely my fault. Chictawaga, New York. Hiya, Joe. What do you know?
Well, then, this new events thing might be nice for some people, but for a lot of notable people, the one I'm following, Linux founder Linus Torvalds, he got all these event invites from just any random people that had him in his circle in their circles. So it's like, gone were the messages he wanted to see, and here's all these invites kind of clogging up his stream.
Yep. And in fact, what's really interesting is that I was actually having a conversation with Will Wheaton when all of a sudden he goes, holy crap, what's this? And all these event invites started showing up in his thing, and he got really angry about it. And the head of all of that, Vic Gotundra, from Google, he sent a note to the guy, and the guy wrote back and said, "You are absolutely right. We did not think it through. We will be fixing that. I'm really, really sorry."
Well, Will Wheaton, I used to follow him, too. He tends to get angry a lot.
Well, and that's what was funny. I mean, we were just, you know, having a regular, everyday kind of conversation, and all of a sudden, he's just spouting all this stuff.
Well, wait a minute. What, were you with him on a hangout or something?
Yeah, and it was nuts. He was a little nuts. It was pretty funny. But yeah, but you know, it wasn't 5 minutes later that Vic.
Yeah, hard to pronounce name. We understand. Yeah.
I just don't remember it. I mean, if I see it, I remember it. I just don't remember it. Wrote to him and said, "Look, I get it. We screwed up. We're sorry. We'll fix it. I'm sorry." So they know, and it's probably already fixed, frankly.
It was actually fairly soon. There's one of the other guys. I can't remember his name either. I think it was Mark something from the Google Plus team is saying, "Yeah, oh, oops," and replied in the thread that Linus Torvald started. It's like Linus almost said he was going to like leave Google Plus for good, which would have been very bad.
Yeah. So did Will Wheaton. I mean, I can understand that. You know, I've gotten a bunch that, and I'm nobody compared to those guys. I'm nothing. And I got a bunch that I really could not have cared less about. So, yeah, I get it. They probably got thousands each. Hey, how cool would it be if Will Wheaton came to our event? Hey, how cool would it be if Linus Torvalds came to our event? Yeah, right. Yeah, because they're going to fly all over the country just because you asked them to.
Well, it's good that they did fix it, and I did see a follow-up post from Linus, so it looks like you didn't leave for good. That's good for all of us.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? The people make mistakes. And the problem is, that's just one of the ways that you know that Google Plus is not a ghost town. If you make a mistake in a ghost town, nobody notices. You make a mistake like this in a vibrant community, and it's magnified a billion times.
Almost on purpose. I mean, they have that feature called Ripples that shows you how things were posted and reposted and re-reposted and so on.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell you what, I tend to spend a lot more time in Google Plus than I do in Facebook or Twitter. I follow my daughter in Twitter. She's not listening, so I can say that. I stalk my daughter in Twitter. not in Twitter, in Facebook. But I carry on far more serious conversations with real people in Google Plus than I do anywhere else.
Well, I'll tell you the one big downside to Google Plus, though, especially for businesses. I mean, you can throw up a page on Google Plus, like AMD. I happen to be following. They have a page.
Right.
It's not a simple plus.google.com/AMD. No, it's going to be some big, long, random-looking string there. Whereas on Facebook, it's like, I don't know if it exists, but like facebook.com/WGMC or whatever.
Right. And I completely agree with you, and we've all made that remark. It's just, it's not friendly. That particular piece, not friendly. I agree with you 100%.
If they would fix that, I'd say they'd have another big jump in adoption rate.
Yeah. Because who wants to go to /943D7J15? I mean, it's ridiculous. You're absolutely right.
It wouldn't be all that hard, too. I mean, if they had something like /members/something, and they would just put a redirect to the one with the big long number in it.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, well, thanks for chatting with me.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Keep smiling, Joe. Yeah, there's, that's, somebody thought, this will be pretty cool. And in all their testing about it, they never thought, anybody can send an invitation to anybody, and there really are morons out on the internet. So we should protect against that.
Hi.
And nobody did. So I get it. I do. I get it. Although it certainly afforded me some amusement, but that's a different story altogether. The reality is that they have now fixed that, and it's all good to go. So I'm becoming more and more a fan of Google Plus. I agree that there's not it's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm enjoying the heck out of it. I really am. Are we having an echo? But okay. That's okay. Do I have time to read? No, we have less than a minute to go. I do have time?
Go ahead.
Okay. This is Tom from Rochester. Just purchased an iPad 2. Since my fingers are too fat, I'm going to buy a stylus. The range in prices are from $2 to $40. What's the big difference in prices? Are the more expensive ones better quality? The short answer, Tom, there is no difference. And the quality is, the reality is that the more expensive ones have slightly better pads on the end, so they will last longer. But in essence, they're pretty much all the same. I have both a $2 one and a $35 one. And the $35 one certainly looks nicer. And if you spend all that money on an iPad 2, you want it to look nicer. So I get that spending the $40 is important. But in terms of day-to-day use, like I said, both of them work exactly the same way. Although on the $35 one I have, the pad is a little, I think it'll last a little longer. That's really the only difference between them. You can buy an awful lot of $2 styluses for the amount of life you'll get out of the $35 stylus, frankly. But that's about it. And for all of them, you know what? Your fingers are too fat, but the styluses are fat. I mean, the reality is that the size of the spot that you have to tap is designed for the human finger. So getting a point stylus isn't really going to help you much. It's got to be fat enough for the sensors to recognize it as an actual tap. And so that's going to be fairly large to begin with. But, just get whatever you want to get. Get one that suits your style. If you like the little plastic one, I got a green plastic one and a black and silver one that looks like an expensive pen. But that's kind of it. The whole idea behind the iPad originally was you didn't need a stylus. But the reality is that people like styluses. They like to be able to write with a pen. We've spent how many thousands of years writing with a pen. And it's better to write with a pen than with your finger. I use the stylus that I have at work on the iPad and on the Asus Transformer and on the Zoom tablet and on my phone. Of all those things, I hasten to say I only own the phone. And I have used it on all of those, and it works fine. Because it's essentially mimicking the human finger. But to do that, it's got to be just a little bit thick because the finger pad is fairly wide. Now, depending on the size of your hand, it may be smaller than your finger, but it's not going to be, it's not going to be like the styluses we used to use with the old PDAs, like from Palm, where it looked like a pen. It had a tiny little point on it, and you could use that. It's not like that at all. It's thicker, and it's kind of a squishy front end. They're pretty cool. They're useful. One of the most useful things about them is there's no finger oil.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you what, after using your phone or iPad or tablet of any sort for an extended period of time, you have to wipe it off. It looks like heck.
Yeah, just like the keyboard.
Yeah, exactly right. And so you want to wipe it off and keep it clean. But with the stylus, there's much, much, much less of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you start with a clean slate, if you start with a clean glass, then you don't pick up any. There's no place to pick up oils from, and they won't absorb into the stylus. So you get a much better deal there.
Cool.
Yeah. Are we?
We're very close. I could also mention, I guess it said on the log that I could mention something about the station.
You should.
All right. So let's see. On Wednesday, July 4th, we're going to have some wonderful patriotic specials for you. You can hear the United States Air Force Airmen of Note Big Band from 1 to 4 with guests Kurt Rosenwinkel and Al Jarreau right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And now I'll do that.
This is the 1 minute outro?
Yes.
Excellent. I have to admit, I'm a sucker for patriotic music. I admit it. I love my country, and I'm a sucker for patriotic music. So I will definitely be listening in, because I'm not working Wednesday.
Oh.
Second year, I think, ever that RIT has had no classes on it. 4th of July. Listen, we're going to take a break, but we've got a whole another hour of this nonsense, so you should probably stay tuned. I'm Nick Francesco with the long-suffering but magnificent Linda Wildman here with me today, so give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. As we come back for another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, we are Soundbites. And we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
That's not entirely accurate. I am Nick Francesco.
And I'm Linda Wildman, I think.
Yes, I think you are. And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into our second hour of Sound Bites. You can give us a call, you know, at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And I'm going to read another news item. I think we've talked a little bit about Apple and Google today, so let's talk some about Microsoft. Microsoft has been promising a cheap and cheerful upgrade to Windows 8 for those who buy new PCs. But what about that five-year-old PC in the basement? Or for those of you who are listening to Soundbites, that 10-year-old computer you're still using. If the historically well-connected Mary Jo Foley of ZDNet is right, the upgrade path will go further back, much further back. Although upgraders will still want Windows 7 if they need to carry over absolutely everything, tipsters are claiming that settings can transfer from releases as old as Windows Vista Service Pack 1. Those with truly ancient PCs, we're looking at you, Soundbites listeners, can even bring over personal files from an operating system as dated as Windows XP Service Pack 3. Like we saw last time around, some of the 7 to 8 upgrade rules are a bit Byzantine. 7 professional users can't step down to the non-professional Windows 8 release, for example, and it's equally verboten to change language editions. Or move from 32 to 64-bit code without a full-scale reinstall. The extra-long olive branch will be slightly unusual for Microsoft if it's confirmed, but then the company is also trying to move along a user base that in some cases has clung to XP for more than a decade, and in some cases for over 20 years. Redmond is no doubt eager to get rid of our dependency issues. So are you ready to finally upgrade that old XP machine to the shiny lollipop that is Windows 8? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. I know that Windows 8 has many additions, as did Windows 7. I know that Windows 8 has that weird Metro interface that takes some getting used to, but change is not necessarily a bad thing, as those of you who've moved to Ubuntu with Unity have discovered, or have gotten to Chromebooks, which is, you know, you just get a different interface. You can still do all the same stuff. You just do it in a different way. That's not necessarily a bad thing. So, and Microsoft would really, really like it if you would stop using Windows XP. Just stop right now. So naturally, they're eager to get you onto Windows 8, so they're providing at least some small way of getting you over there. I don't know that Windows 8 is going to be the magnificent work of art or moment of commerce that they want it to be, but it's certainly worth a look. I mean, is it my favorite interface? No, honestly, to me, it kind of reminds me of 1950s Russian architecture. It's blocky, and it's garish, but or art rather more than architecture. But it's still an interesting and different way to do things, and particularly on a phone, it actually has some really nice little features because, you know, they're square, and since every phone in the world is a rounded rectangle, you will find that things fit on the screen nicely, actually. Sorry, did I say that out loud? Yeah, I'm so disappointed in Apple. I just really am. I mean, that's a stupid patent, and I know that their lawyers are somewhere off in a back room wiping their hands, but really, it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous.
I wonder if it costs more money to make a rounded rectangle than a square.
Well,
you know what I'm talking
it certainly
about.
Will from
a
now
square
on.
Rectangle.
Because you'll have to pay Apple for every one you make. Ridiculous. But okay, whatever. You know, my laptop is a rounded rectangle.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. It must be a safety issue.
Well, I suspect that's the reason, that there are no sharp corners. I get that part. But to patent that, and then to have the government say, oh, that's a reasonable patent. Really, you know, Apple just is desperately trying to stay relevant in the game. I get that. But really, the government should have had enough common sense. Somebody in the patent, obviously not everyone in the patent office is an Einstein. Because at least one of them said, oh, you rounded rectangle. Yep, that's a good patent right there. I'm sorry, it's stupid. It's stupid. We really should have a law in the United States that says the patent office people are allowed to slap you. I'd like to patent the parenthesis, please. Oh, sorry, I'll leave now. I can't help it. I can't help it. It just makes me crazy. Now, Chris over in the IRC chat is saying, I'm making the case we have a rogue government. And I'm not saying we have a rogue government. I'm saying we have idiots who work for the government. Now, you may decide that extends higher or lower. I don't really care. The reality is, in every organization, there are idiots. And it seems that they seem to be congregating in the patent office.
Maybe they have rounded corners.
Maybe they should of themselves have rounded corners. That's like my brain. It's not sharp, but I can patent it. Sorry. 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 All right. I have to go back and talk a little bit about Google I.O. and all the stuff that they invented. I cannot wait to get my, two things. I have a Nexus, I'm getting the Nexus 7 tablet. I already said I ordered that, actually day two. That's how much willpower I have, everyone. I waited till the second day to order mine, which probably means I won't get it for a year. It probably had 100 billion orders the first day. But also my phone theoretically will get the upgrade. I say theoretically. I have the Galaxy Nexus phone, which is supposed to get the upgrade to Jelly Bean, which is the next version of the Android operating system, in mid-July. But my phone is from Verizon, so Verizon will have a lot to say about when that update actually gets pushed out. My hope, of course, is that you just let it go through day one, because mine is a completely stock Android system. There's no additional anything on my phone. In fact, one of the points of the lawsuit was that the icons were too much alike. And in fact, my icons look nothing like Apple's icons, nothing like them. For example, for settings, they use a gear. Mine looks more like an equalizer. I don't see how that's the same. I just don't see it. But then again, I'm not a high paid lawyer who really, needs the business. I understand that. The only people who really win patent cases are lawyers, but I'm very interested in getting my Google phone. I really buy my Google tablet. I'm very interested in getting, basically I'm very interested in getting ice cream sandwich because I really like the search stuff that can be done. I discovered just, and how long have I had this phone?
Well, now,
go ahead.
Isn't there a patent on an ice cream sandwich?
There probably, it's got rounded corners. It's a rounded corner rectangle, so I'm not sure you can sell ice cream sandwiches anymore.
Can it be called an ice cream sandwich?
Exactly. So, you're absolutely right, Linda. We'll have to call it something else. Probably something is, you know, Android 4.1. Although Google's used to paying people money for patents, they call it the droid, and they paid George Lucas for that.
Oh.
Because he patented the word droid, when he did Star Wars originally.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But
it wasn't there an Android?
There's always been Androids. People were writing stories about Androids, but they probably didn't directly call them droids. No, in the 30s, you had stories about Androids.
Oh, okay.
Cybernetic men, cyborgs, androids, they were called all those things as far back as Amazing Tales, Pulp magazine back in the 30s. But nobody patented the words because back in those days, words were for everybody, not just for the person with the biggest lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, did I get back to that again?
I think I got you back there.
Yeah, I think it's your fault this time, Linda.
Sorry.
We look forward to your emails. Care of Linda Wildman. Jazz 90.1. how long have I had my phone? And I just discovered this week that I can do voice dictation. Actually, the new version of Google Docs came out. Google Docs is an online version of an Office suite. I won't say Microsoft Office because that's probably banned. But it has a word processor and a spreadsheet and a presentation program online. So you don't have to buy anything. You can just go into your browser and use it.
Mm-hmm.
What I discovered was that on my phone and on the tablets that I have at work, even with the old operating system, I can open up a document, and when you bring up your keyboard to type on the screen, there's a microphone. Mm-hmm. If you hit the microphone, you can talk, and it translates your words into text. So I can say, hello, exclamation point. My name is Nick, period. Glad to see you, exclamation point. How are you, question mark? And it's real dictation. The only thing is, in this version, because I don't have ice cream, because I don't have jelly bean, right? I only have ice cream sandwich, which is this version. The next one is jelly bean. See, it's I for ice cream sandwich, J for jelly bean. Before that was H for honeycomb and G for, I forget what G was. But it doesn't matter. But it's alphabetical.
The only thing that's going through my head is beam me up, Scotty.
Exactly. But in the new version, theoretically, it takes real dictation because this one doesn't understand new paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
It's really designed for text messages and stuff like that. So, for example, if I have you in my address book with your mobile phone number, I can say text Linda Wildman. And I think I then have to say message. Text Linda Wildman, message, hi, Linda, exclamation point. I'll be a little late, period. Hope you don't mind, question mark. And off it goes. So it's really not designed for real voice dictation. It's not like I'm dictating a novel, right? So it doesn't have that.
Well, Twitter has the, you only can put so many characters in, right?
Yeah, only 140.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the same. I don't know how many characters. It's an awful lot. I talked for a long time before I finally said too many characters. And it was all there. It was all on screen. It just stopped taking characters until I hit done and then hit the microphone button again. And then I could talk some more. So it wasn't really onerous in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not designed to be your voice dictation system. I think they changed that in Jelly Bean, but we'll see. And I can't wait to get it.
More to come, probably.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it really does some pretty interesting stuff. It's very much like Siri. You know, Siri made me angry too this week. By the way, it's been an angry week for me, technologically.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of mine has
have a seat. Well, never mind. You're already
right. I need a bit of a lie down. Is what I really need. In one of the commercials, it says somebody, I forget who, says to Siri, play some Coltrane. And it plays John Coltrane.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this person had a bunch of Coltrane songs on their phone. And I said, play Coltrane. And it comes back and says, I can't find coal, C-O-A-L, train, T-R-A-I-N. Well, excuse me, then how did it work in the commercial? I think that commercial, and I hope you're all sitting down, and if you're driving, pull over to the side of the road. I think that commercial lied to me. I think it lied to me. I forget who it was. I don't know if it was the Samuel L. Jackson commercial or the Zoe Deschanel commercial or the John Malkovich commercial, but one of them lied to me. Doggone it. But yeah, it was it was a week of that stuff. The person who had the phone was just kind of angry with me because this person walked in. I won't even say if it's a man or a woman because that might narrow it down to who it was, and I don't want them to even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Walked in on me testing this stuff on my Zoom tablet and said, "Oh, my phone does exactly the same thing. Does it better?" Well, I'm not here to be in a contest. I was just testing this. I'm sure it's a magnificent piece of technology, and congratulations that you own it. I don't know why we're measuring ourselves here, but we were, and it didn't do some things that this person thought it could do, and decided those were unfair tests. I can't get excited about that stuff anymore. I can get excited about Apple patenting rounded rectangles, but I can't get excited that which one is better, Siri or Google Voice. Or I simply don't care. You know, whichever one makes you happy, go for it. I think it's just a matter of leapfrogging. I honestly think that the demos I've seen of the new Google Voice Command Center, I don't know what they're going to call it, Majel, which was the code name, or they're going to call it Google Assistant, or they're just going to call it Google. I don't really care. I think that right now, in terms of its feature set, it can do more than Siri. That doesn't make it better than Siri. It just means it does more than Siri right now. Siri will then leapfrog. Google will then leapfrog. Siri will then leapfrog. So it just really depends on where you put your foot down in the stream as to what river you're in. And I don't really care. All right, so we're going to take a break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Linda Wildman, me, Nick Francesco, and you. You know the phone numbers. I know you know the phone numbers. I know you're sitting inside because it's so dang hot. Give us a call. Back in just a couple of minutes. Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Linda Wildman.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Lynn from Clymer, New York, on the line. Welcome, Lynn. What's your question?
I have a couple. One of them, do all laptops have CMOS batteries?
Yes.
Okay. That's a good thing. My buddy will be happy to know that.
Most of them don't really use them as much as they used to, because they'll use the real battery first.
Yeah, I think his battery, his machine's old enough that the batteries are all died.
Yeah.
He can't boot it or do anything with it. So maybe if we replace a CMOS battery, maybe we can get it to boot.
Well, if you can find it and if it's removable.
Yeah, okay.
And no promises there.
I understand. Okay, second question. Around the school there, have you had any experience with these hybrid drives in computers?
Yes.
Do you like them?
Yes. They're fast.
That's what I... Is there enough room with that 8 gigs on that Momentus drive to get all of the operating system?
No. Well, maybe.
Maybe kind of.
It depends a lot.
How many applications you have extra.
Exactly. There's a lot of heap space. How many icons do you have on the desktop? All of that has to do with how much memory is actually taken up. But 8 gig generally should be enough to do all of that. I've got systems that have pure SSD drives, and I've got systems that have hybrid drives that are almost as fast.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing on PC Per, that those things work well. That when you go to load an operating system on, do you load it to one place, or do you just load it like a regular spinning drive?
The one that I've used doesn't differentiate. It deals with all that. I haven't used them all, but I imagine the others work pretty much the same way. It's just a drive to you.
Unaware that there was anything other than the Seagate, two different versions of the Seagate.
No, there's a, I forget which one I used. It wasn't Western Digital. It was somebody else.
It doesn't matter.
I don't remember. I'm sorry.
No, not a big problem.
I'm getting older by the minute.
Who is it? Even Linda's laughing.
Even Linda's laughing. That's the thing. Linda is not only incredibly good at the board and terrific when she does her show from 11 to 2s on weekdays, 11 to 2s on weekdays. I really should be in a home.
It's been 11 to 1, but it'll change. It's going to 11 to 2.
Yeah, 11 to 2 on weekdays. But she's also way fun to be with. Way fun to be with.
Oh, she's got a delightful voice, too.
She does, doesn't she? She gives great radio.
Okay. We probably don't want to go too much farther with that.
That's enough.
Anyway, thank you very much. Have a good 4th of July.
Thanks, you too.
To you guys and to the listeners.
Yep, to all of us. Thank you. Thank you, Lynn.
Yep, thanks a lot.
Bye. That's a line from a show somewhere. She gives great phone. What's that from? I don't remember.
Girl talk, maybe?
Maybe, but it's a joy. It's a joy having Linda here. Otherwise, you'd be listening to blank air because I can't run the board. I absolutely admit it. Have no idea how the board works. Don't want to know how the board works. I'm just happy to sit here and be the idiot on the mic as opposed to the actual intelligent person who has to run the board. Of course, that's not always true when Dave is running the board, but then sometimes it's an idiot on both sides. But the reality is that we're hoping that Dave and Steve are both back next week, because I don't know that I can do this too many more weeks in a row. Did we lose somebody?
Yeah,
happens every once in a while. The person who just called up, please call back.
Roger.
Because what?
Roger,
please call back, because somehow we lost you, and I apologize. That happens once in a while. Could be, Chris, could be. So call us back, and we'll be glad to put you on the air. I apologize. You may well be, you may not know you're lost. You may be in the system somewhere, and some third grade teacher's phone, desk phone, is ringing. I'm not sure what that's about, but we... this, as we've said many, many times in the past, this station was never designed for a talk show. Rob was insane enough to put us on the air, and God bless him for that, but the equipment was never designed for us, and while we can kludge it to a little bit, sometimes we just don't use a big enough hammer. And so if there's somebody out there who would like to donate enough money to put in a real phone system for talk radio shows, we'd be more than honored to accept that. But until then, we have to deal with the fact that sometimes we lose people on the phone. So I will just read another email question. You can always email us at soundbites.org, and we will talk about these in the air. Joe from Rochester writes, I have a TV, AV receiver, and media server that are all network capable through Ethernet. I'd like to connect them to my network wirelessly. I've read I can only do it if I hardwire another router to my main router and connect devices to the extension router, or get a router that has a client mode so I can connect that wireless router to my existing wireless network, or, and I prefer this option since I have an extra router, upgrade the firmware of the extra router with DDWRT firmware that will let me use the router in client mode. Do you know anything about DDWRT firmware? Well, wow, Joe, wow. The simplest way around this is to just buy another router that has wireless in it. This is assuming that all of your devices will talk wirelessly. That's your first hurdle. If they don't, you can't necessarily just buy a dongle that does wireless, because there have to be drivers, and your television and AV receiver may not be able to deal with that. Now, if they can do wireless natively, then what you need to do is connect them all up somehow. Now, you could just connect them all to your media server. I mean, it's not... Are you planning on going on to the internet with your AV receiver? Are you planning on going the internet through your TV? If so, then you need to connect to your router. Otherwise, you really just need to connect to your media server, and there are different ways of doing that. Some media servers, if your media server is just a PC, you can always add a wireless card to that and set it up to serve out to, and usually that's within whatever your media software is, you can find, and since there's 50 different ones, you don't tell me which one you have. I can't get you right there, but that would be the way that would work. Certainly, you can get you can change your firmware or buy a DDWRT router, and basically that router would give you the ability to essentially piggyback onto your network and provide the exact same wireless signal that you currently are providing through your wired system. And it doesn't change anything. It just kind of moves it into another medium. So that may be your best bet. It works fine, although it's just as easy and probably not a lot more expensive.
Sometimes called bridge mode or wireless distribution system.
Yeah.
Apple's Airport Express does it.
Apple's Airport Express does it. There's a bunch of them
from
do
Steve.
It. Yep, Steve would know. Steve is actually at his store today, so somebody please go down and glare at him for us. Or just for me. Linda's having too much fun here. But yeah, sometimes client mode, bridge mode, a bunch of different ways, and a bunch of routers, including the Apple Air thing, does it. And you can very easily set it up to just essentially be that bridge between the wired and wireless worlds. So, yeah, go for it. It's a pretty cool way to do that. Is Roger on?
Yes, he's here.
Oh, he's here. Roger from Rochester, New York. Thank you for calling back, Roger. How are you?
Good, thank you. I use an iMac, and I use Firefox.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly it came up with a message that says, well, this is embarrassing. Firefox is having trouble recovering your windows and tabs. This is usually caused by a recently opened web page. It says you can try removing one or more tabs that you think may be causing the problem or starting an entirely new browsing session.
Yep.
So I don't know what to do.
Well, what it means you need to do is you need to close down Firefox. And that just doesn't mean, now you're on a Mac.
Yes,
so closing the window doesn't close Firefox. You need to control Q your way out.
Okay.
Which closes not only, as you know, there's really two levels of Macintosh software. There's that window you see on the screen, and there's also that menu bar at the top.
Right.
So closing the window doesn't close the menu bar, which means that Firefox is still open. So with Firefox open, go up to File and select Quit. That actually closes both the program itself and the window that's running. That then, theoretically, you wait a minute, maybe you even reboot your machine, and Firefox should come back up. This is a result of that thing we were talking about earlier in the show.
Yeah,
about,
I heard you talking about that.
Yeah, about the sandbox.
Yeah.
And you probably your version of Firefox either doesn't have the sandbox or it just didn't work well in this particular case. So shutting it down completely using Control Q rather than just closing the window, and maybe even going so far as to reboot your system, excuse me, should fix the problem.
Okay, I'll try that. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bye bye.
Oh yeah, it's Command Q, not Control Q, but he knew that. Splat Q is what does it.
Now, what happens when you get your jelly beans and your ice cream sandwich in the sandbox?
Exactly. You get sandy ice cream sandwiches, but they still have rounded corners, so they're still illegal. You're just having way too much fun with all those words, aren't you?
Yes.
But yeah, Firefox, all operating systems have this problem once in a while. Often, frankly, that is caused by a virus or something that's trying to get into your system. And it partially at least broke out of the sandbox. And that, it's if you're lucky, Firefox caught it, and that's what killed the session. But you really should reboot, and it wouldn't hurt at that point to run at least your antivirus system, if not actually dancing the Macarena. That's part of the Security Tango at securitytango.com. The system has multiple parts to it, the Windows Waltz, the Linux Lambada, and the Mac Arena. So you dance whichever one belongs
all
to your
all dances, huh?
Exactly right. You dance whichever one fits you in the Security Tango. I was very excited to discover somebody had actually donated to it. Thank you. You were my first. Thanks. But the thing is that generally speaking, when you have that kind of a problem, it's either, well, of course, anything can just be a momentary glitch, right? Spike in the line and it screwed up some of your memory for a moment, whatever. These things happen. But you should always assume, and I know, but you should always assume that the problem is a virus and clean your machine again. Because you never know when it really is going to be a virus. And that's important. We're really past the days when Mac people can pretend they don't get viruses. I'm sorry, I know, but we're really past those days. And you can cling to the past if you like, and it's very sweet, but get on your penny farthing bicycle and go home and clean your machine. It's important to do. I'm sorry, but oh well, get over yourself. The big thing is, there's two things really. There aren't a lot of Mac viruses, but very few of you live in isolation. You share files with other people, and you should be a good net citizen at the very, very least, and clean all the files that you're sharing with other people, because you're smarter than they are, and so you can do that for them so they don't have to. So if you're going to share a file with anybody else, I mean, if you're basically a hermit, and you know who I'm talking to, if you're basically a hermit, then you don't have to worry about that. It's just your machine. If you kill your machine, that's your machine. But if you're going to share files with other people, and this goes for Mac people, Windows people, and Linux people, if you're going to share files with other people, be a good net citizen and work at making sure that your system is virus-free. Right? So you will find happier people at the other end of your connection when you are not giving them viruses. So be very careful of that and make sure that that you can handle, you can do that. We don't really have time just before the break, do we?
I
got time. All right. Our next caller is Tim from Webster, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Yeah, hi. Real quick, hopefully easy question for you regarding the Firefox. I'm getting this prompt that comes down at the top of the screen about some plugins used on this page may be out of date. And when I click on the Update Plugins button, it sends me to a page. And I'm wondering, can I just do the Update Now options? Makes me nervous every...
Yeah. Here's the thing with that. If the page that you are taken to is on your machine, which you can usually tell from the top of the page, if it starts with HTTP and it's localhost or it just says file:// then it's on your machine. But if it's out on the web somewhere, then it's bogus. But if it's on your machine, or you could go into your preferences and update your plugins from there directly rather than going to somebody else's page, which is much safer.
Ah, you lost me on this just a little bit.
All right, here's the deal. Under your Firefox, it's under your preferences, I believe. Is a list of your plugins
under preferences?
Right. What operating system are you running?
7.
I think it's under file preferences, but it might be edit preferences. It might be tools preferences. I don't remember where it is on 7. But you'll have preferences or options or... The problem is they keep changing it and I keep not running every operating system. But hold on,
Tim. Okay.
We're going to take a break and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Linda Wildman, Tim from Webster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. You, too, have plenty of time to give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. As we continue with the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on
member-supported
Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Linda Wildman.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Tim from Webster on the line. Tim, apparently it's... Are you there?
Yeah. Can I ask something real quick?
Yeah.
When I do click on that update plugins, I am landing on what looks like Mozilla, you know, Mozilla.org site. So
yeah,
I figured that would be help me determine that this is pretty safe.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you think I can just go with the update now options it's giving me? It's giving me like the QuickTime plugin. I don't even know when I used that, but it's also giving me the Java development toolkit update.
Well, the reality is that in general, if you have an out-of-date plugin, you will get that error message.
Okay.
So you go to some sites that use QuickTime, you go to some sites that use Java, you're going to get that message. You either live with it or you do the updates. And hitting that update now button should update everything to the latest version. And so that message will go away until there's another update that you didn't do.
Okay, because it is saying next to the update that it's vulnerable. So I don't know exactly what that means.
Which update?
Both the QuickTime and the Java.
Well, QuickTime and Java are both vulnerable, yes.
What does that mean?
It means that they are vectors for infection on your system.
Exactly. That's what I was afraid of.
Yeah. So you can either remove those plugins, and then you'll go to places on the net where you just get a box.
Exactly, yeah.
Or you can update them to the latest version.
Okay. And as long as I'm doing it on this Mozilla site, I should be fine.
Yeah, you should be fine.
Okay, thanks so much.
All right, thanks.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Yep, have fun. Yeah, tools options, as several people have either texted or sent in the IRC chat or hit me telepathically or however they did that. So we've talked about Google. We've talked about Chrome. We've talked about Apple iOS devices. Let's talk about all of them together. Google announced at its annual developer conference Thursday that its Chrome browser and its Google Drive, a Dropbox-like storage service, are coming to Apple iOS devices. Adding the Google browser to iOS devices means Google users will be able to get a more consistent experience across multiple devices, including their iPhones and iPads. Brian Rakowski, vice president of Chrome, showed off how the browser will work on iOS devices. Specifically, he showed how the Sync feature that Google recently added to Chrome will work on iOS devices. Sync allows people to share their browser settings across multiple devices when they're signed in using their Google credentials. This means tabs you've opened on your computer can be accessed when you're in the Chrome browser on your smartphone. It means that passwords will go across. It means that, what do you call it? Autofill will work so that you get exactly the same experience on every Google browser on every device. Now, you can turn that off if you want to. I've done it because my home machines and my work machines have different bookmarks. And I don't want those to sync across. I do things at home that I don't do at work, and believe me, vice versa. So I don't want the same set there. But you can set it up to sync if you want to, and then you have exactly the same experience all the way across. Google also announced its Drive service, which lets people store and share documents, and it will now work on iOS devices as well. The service will also work on Chrome OS devices. We brought many of the best features of Drive to mobile, said Clay Bavor, Director of Product for Google Apps. Google launched the Drive service, which was formerly known as Google Docs, about 10 weeks ago. That's the one that gives you word processing and spreadsheet and presentation packages all through the browser. Already the company says 10 million users are signed up to use it. One of the great features of Drive that Bavor showed off during the keynote was that images can be scanned and stored as PDF files in Google Drive, and using Google search technology, they're searchable. One of the demonstrations showed how you could scan a postal receipt and then search for it in your Drive files. And photos are also searchable, even if they aren't properly labeled. For example, a picture of someone taken at the Great Pyramid in Egypt can be stored in Google Drive, and you can find it by typing in photos of us at the pyramids. Even though there was no label that said pyramids, the Google technology is able to recognize the picture as one taken in front of the pyramids. All of this functionality, which Google has enabled for desktops and laptops, can now be available on mobile devices, and in particular Apple iOS devices such as the iPhone and the iPad, of course across the entire Google line of Google products, and Windows, and just dang near everybody. Linux, everybody. So, are you hot for the power of Google Drive and your iOS device? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Pretty amazing stuff, the ability to do that searching. People have talked about it for a long time. It's never been great. I don't think it's really 100% even on Google's site, but it's nice to be able to say, you know, pictures of us in front of the pyramids. Mm-hmm.
It's coming along. The technology is coming along.
Yeah, it has. I think, staggering implications. You know, Facebook has bought a face recognition company so that they can find you in pictures even if you don't want to be found.
Ooh.
But Google, this is so far at least private. They're your pictures that you can keep from other people, from seeing.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thing.
So it's a fairly different thing. Theosis over on the Soundbites chat on IRC said another interesting feature of Google Drive is they can actually preview Apple Pages and probably other iWork documents. One of the nice things that I really like about Google Drive is that you get 5 gigabytes of storage, but if you save documents in the Google Drive format, they don't count towards your storage. So I've got hundreds of documents up there, and when I go to upload them, one of the options is convert to Google Docs. I select that. Now they don't count against my storage. So I've used like 128K of my 5 gig, and I've got hundreds of documents up there. I wish there were a bulk transfer. Well, I've got, you know, 800
plus. You need
plus,
a minion.
Yeah, I really do. I've got 800 plus columns that I've written and et cetera, et cetera. And it's a great way to back them up. But if I back them up if I just put them there, then they take up my space. If I convert them, they don't. So I'd love to be able to say all these files go into this folder as Google Docs and walk away. Mm-hmm. That's what I'd really like to
do. There needs to be a droid for that.
You need the droid for that. Exactly. You need an Android, a real Android for that. Exactly. Data? Let him do it overnight. Let him work on it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that I realized that there are 1,000 different Google Drive type, Dropbox type, iCloud type services. And the question always comes down to, who do you trust? The correct answer is none of them. However, the government has said they trust Google Docs. Their documents are up there. They really kind of have their own private Google Cloud. But they say it's secure enough up there for them. And that, you know, that's whatever else you may think of them, they're certainly security conscious these days.
Okay, hang on.
Whether they do it well is your choice to make. But they're certainly security conscious. And so they've said that it's good enough for them. And that makes it good enough for me. So I use Google Docs, Google Drive, pardon me. I had this trouble stop calling it Writely. Google Docs was something that they bought from Writely, a company called Writely, which did essentially the same thing. You could create documents online, and it worked great. And then Google bought it, called it Google Docs, added spreadsheets and presentations, and now they call it Google Drive. And I had trouble changing from calling it Writely, and now I'm having trouble changing from calling it Google Docs. So instead of me talking about it, let's go to the phone and talk to George from Greece, New York. Hi, George. What's up?
Hi, Nick. A few weeks ago, you were on to a topic, and I was not in a position to be able to call in, but I think I'm experiencing the same problem with sluggishness getting logged on to certain websites.
Mm-hmm.
The one I go to most often is Yahoo.
Sure.
Hello?
Yep. Sorry?
And I would say it's probably at least 2 months ago that I noticed that it was getting very slow. My machine is a 1.6 gigahertz Celeron with 1.5 gigabytes of RAM, and I'm running Windows XP Home Edition, working with Microsoft's browser.
Yep.
And I've been trying to watch some things on the Task Manager. It seems to me that my system quite often is running at about the one gigabit or gigabyte on the RAM, but the CPU seems to be tied up at the 100% level quite a bit of the time, especially when it's acting sluggish.
Yep.
And I'm curious to know, are they sending out, I see a lot of videos now in the ads. Is this bogging down the rate at which the information comes that I'm interested in?
Yes, absolutely. Every time you go to a site that has one of those stupid auto video ads that start running whether you want it or not, pardon me, I have no opinion on them.
I'm glad to see that you're neutral on it, but go ahead.
Thank you, thank you. I pride myself on my impartiality. The whenever you go to one of those sites, they start downloading stuff. That takes time. And depending on how they've set it up, you don't get control back of your system until the video starts to play. Just like that, and we're done. So, yes, it's probably not you. What?
I'll catch you next week. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry we are actually done for the week. But it's probably not you, George. I'm suspecting that whatever the problem is, it's more than likely coming from Yahoo's homepage. You might be faster with a different browser. Try Firefox or Chrome. That may make it a little faster, particularly if you're using an old version of Internet Explorer. Definitely, if you're using an old version of Internet Explorer, try Firefox or Chrome. We're done for another week. I want to thank, from the deepest pits of my heart, Linda Wildman for keeping me sane for the last 2 hours. George will be coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. You really need to stay and listen to that. In the meantime, I'm going to go home and find a baseball bat and go find Dave and Steve. And we'll be back next week with the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.